I found it interesting indeed that during the reading of the gospel, I did not hear any gasps. I didn't hear any moans or protests. No, I heard no gasps when Jesus said that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes. I heard no protests when Jesus said that he must be killed. I heard no one rebuke those claims by Jesus. At least nothing that would move Jesus to say to anyone, "Here, get behind me, Satan." But why not? I mean, why would we not be moved? Moved to gasp or moan or protest about what Jesus has shared with us this morning? I guess there are several possible answers to this question. One option that allows us not to gasp might be that we've heard this story before and we know how it ends. We claim to already know what the disciples cannot even imagine in terms of what this story requires of them or of us. So we can move beyond what Jesus is saying today, move beyond it as a way of saving our emotional and spiritual capital to invest in what we believe is perhaps more pertinent to our lives in this current time and place. Another option that allows us not to moan is that we see this as simply part of a historical drama, a story that merely plays out in this particular gospel space on this particular gospel day. Maybe it is a spectacle that will have little impact on our modern lives after we leave here this morning. Perhaps we will file it away as yet another interesting chronicle that at best has about as much entertainment value as a play at the local theater, but certainly not a narrative which moves us to any meaningful degree of spiritual introspection, social engagement, or outreach to others. Yet another option that may allow us not to protest is that we do not believe we are actually disciples of Jesus, and therefore we are merely called to hear this gospel as spectators. Spectators in a stadium, but certainly not players in the game. While we may be cheering for the good team to win, much like whatever high school team sport we may support, we will probably not be surprised if the good team loses, because it seems that has happened too much during our lives. Perhaps we claim that this is the best for which we can hope, that the wins and losses pretty much even out over time, at least enough to keep us coming back most Sundays, coming back to offer prayer and song and hopefulness, coming back to seek forgiveness and healing and community, coming back to find peace and reconciliation and stillness. But truthfully, none of these options are workable. None of these options really bring us to a spiritual place that allow us to offer those things we need to offer, to seek those gifts we need to seek, to find those spirit places we need to find. So perhaps we should move on to something else, something clear and concise, something reasonable, something that actually applies to our modern lives, something that we can employ today and for the rest of our lives. So how about this? Those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. I think that'll work. Yeah. I mean, it's very nice. It's black and white. Either or. with black and white consequences. While it is concise, it is perhaps not as clear as I had hoped. However, I believe the problem comes from the fact that we really can't pull this off. You see, we don't live in a black and white world, although some people wish we did. Our lives exist and move and evolve in shades of gray. We really cannot pull off black and white in a gray world. I probably should say that the problem comes that I can't pull it off. Having said that, I guess it's possible that there may be some of you who believe that they have come to the point of perfecting the Christian life, perfecting it to a point that you are clearly able to lose your life for Jesus' sake and for the sake of the gospel. So I would ask for those of you who've reached that level of perfection, just hang in there with me, come to me at coffee hour and tell me exactly how you did it. But for the rest of us, those of us who continue to have a hard time living our lives in the way that Jesus led his, I will continue in the hope that together we can find a pathway toward leading a life that somewhat approaches what might be called a Christian life. But first of all, we should take this opportunity to clear up a few misconceptions about what Jesus wants to tell us today, tomorrow, and the days to come. First, we should hear this story as if it were for the very first time. We should hear it in a way that we cannot move beyond what Jesus is saying until we try our best to understand what it means and how we can apply it to our daily lives. Second, today's gospel is indeed a narrative. However, it's part of an ongoing narrative, one that should challenge each of us to hear differently, speak differently, live differently. It is a narrative that should inspire us to look deeply within ourselves and seek answers to the tough questions that this narrative provokes. Finally, if we can sit in our seats throughout this narrative of suffering, shunning, death and resurrection, and claim that we are simply spectators, then we cannot in good conscience claim for ourselves the power of prayer, nor the joy of singing, nor the need to hope, nor the blessings of forgiveness or healing or community. Rather, we should just eat our hot dogs and popcorn and drink our Cokes and watch the game like real spectators. However, for those of us who are willing to recognize that we are truly players, we're starters in this thing called life. If we are truly willing to invest our physical, emotional, and spiritual capital in this thing called a Christian life, then we will come to recognize that Jesus asks a lot of us. To be sure, Jesus is no dummy. Jesus knows that we cannot do what he has done and continues to do. However, what Jesus asks of us today in this narrative, this drama, this spiritual conflict, is to do what we have always consistently been asked to do. We are asked to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. And to love your neighbor as yourself. So that brings us full circle to one of those statements that seem to elude our understanding at times. Jesus said, if you want to become my followers, let them, us, deny themselves to take up their cross and follow me. By taking up our cross, we embark on a journey to live a life committed to the love of God with all that we have and all that we are, by loving our neighbor as ourself. We essentially deny a total fascination, an absolute captivation of, an exclusive attraction to ourselves. However, we must not actually assume that by doing so, we are somehow able to establish a perspective by which we have a total fascination with, absolute captivation of, an exclusive attraction to caring for others. Because we do not live in a black and white world. Rather, we exist and move and evolve in shades of gray. And that requires us, that calls us to recognize the balance to which we are called in our lives. For if we do not, in fact, love our neighbor as ourselves, then we cannot love ourselves. We can't love ourselves to the exclusion of our neighbor, nor can we love our neighbor to the exclusion of ourselves. It is by making our way as best we can in a world of gray. It is by recognizing the need for balance in our efforts rather than trusting in the volatile nature of exclusivity. It is by accepting the possibility that one day we acquire the ability to accept the gifts we are given, gifts that empower us to share those gifts with others. It is in that way, if we can manage it, that we can become followers of Jesus. And if followers, then perhaps we can try to live a life that is at its core focused on the needs of others, a core based on a strong foundation of self-acceptance and self-care. In this way, we will be truly ready, hopefully willing, and spiritually able to take up our cross. Amen.